Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Well, Sunday marks 5 years to the day since the collapse of the investment bank Lehman Brothers. Lehman had been the fourth largest investment bank in the country. At its height, it employed 28,000 people and was worth $60 billion. Its downfall sent financial markets into a tailspin and set off the global financial crisis. Even some in the government at the time, like former Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, were unwilling to publicly acknowledge what was going on.
Well, as you know, we're working through a difficult period in our financial markets right now as we work off some of the past excesses. But the American people can remain confident in the soundness and the resilience of our financial system.
Well, as we now know, that was a bit optimistic. Lehman's bankruptcy triggered a reshaping of Wall Street, the collapse of the insurance giant AIG, even the meltdown of the nation of Iceland. So 5 years later, what has changed on Wall Street and what is left to be done? Joining us is Neil Barofsky. He served as Special Inspector General of the Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP, the $700 billion government bailout of the financial industry. He is also the author of Bailout, an inside account of how Washington abandoned Main Street while rescuing Wall Street. Neil Barofsky, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you.
Well, let's start with the fact that no one from any of these Wall Street firms has yet been put behind bars, which a lot of Americans think is a problem.
Yeah, I think it's one of the frustrating things about the financial crisis is there is a perception, and I think, you know, many times it's a very, very fair perception, that there's been a lack of accountability, that those who were the captains of these ships of Wall Street that helped run our entire economy aground and taking with it much of the global economy have basically gotten away with it. And the question is, what is it exactly? It's not just that they haven't been put behind bars, there hasn't been any indictments or criminal prosecutions. There really hasn't been any degree of accountability. There hasn't been any major actions by the SEC naming these individuals, at least civil actions accusing them of fraud. They really got to keep all the benefits of the excesses that Hank Paulson was talking about 5 years ago, all the money, the hundreds of millions of dollars that they were able to extract from their companies on the way up, they got to keep just about every single penny of it. So there is a deep frustration that those perhaps most responsible for the crisis not only weren't punished, but in some ways were rewarded for their bad conduct.
Well, why is that? Why was there no punishment?
That's the $64 billion. I was going to say $64,000, but really here, whenever we're talking about the crisis, you got to talk in billions or trillion, a dollar question. And, you know, I don't think there's a simple answer. You know, in the direct aftermath of the financial crisis in early 2009, you know, you had to look at this in context. We had just spent as a government trillions and trillions of dollars to save these handful of institutions because it was determined that if any single one of them were to fail, they would bring down the entire global economic system with it. And there was this remarkable statement put out in February 2009 that I don't think gets enough attention, in which, you know, a joint statement of the regulators, including the new Secretary of Treasury, Tim Geithner, essentially saying that the government was going to ensure that the largest financial institutions were not going to fail no matter what. It was de facto nationalization. We were going to put the government's full faith and credit behind these private enterprises. And having done that, the idea that the Department of Justice would then, on the other hand, launch a comprehensive criminal investigation and potential criminal charges against one of these entities was unthinkable.
Well, let's listen to what Eric Holder said. You're talking about the Department of Justice. Here's the Attorney General talking about that in March, using the phrase "too big to jail."
I am concerned that the size of some of these institutions becomes so large that it does become difficult for us to prosecute them when we are hit with indications that if you do prosecute, if you do bring a criminal charge, it will have a negative impact on the national economy, perhaps even the world economy.
Neil Barofsky, is it too late to bring any charges?
It's certainly getting there. You know, there's a 5-year statute of limitations, generally speaking, on criminal charges. The activity that led up to the crisis occurred 2008, but really 2006, 2007. So that ship has already sailed. And also, frankly, the appetite for those types of criminal cases, I think, has also waned. When you're doing these types of investigations, and as a prosecutor and as the head of a law enforcement agency at SIGTARP, you know, as the years go by, it becomes much, much more difficult. Memories fade, and it becomes exponentially harder. But what Eric Holder was saying there is actually a true statement. It's so much shocking and staggering that it's still true in 2013. But in 2009, again, it would have probably been a bad idea to indict one of these companies and face undoing all the hard work that was done to save them in the first place. It's not just. It's not fair.
Yeah.
But it's the reality.
We're speaking with Neil Barofsky. He served as Special Inspector General for TARP. We'll be back with more with him after a break. Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from GEICO, protecting drivers and their families with insurance coverage for over 75 years. More at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO.
We're speaking with Neil Barofsky, former Inspector General of the Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP. Neil Barofsky, in terms of regulations and what has been done, the Dodd-Frank Act of 2010 was supposed to rein in the financial institutions, but there are concerns, they've been talked about a lot, that it has not been fully implemented. What still needs to happen with Dodd-Frank?
Well, a whole bunch needs to happen. I think something like 60% of the rules that were dictated by Congress to be written up and made formal by the regulators still haven't been done. The most high-profile one, of course, is the named Volcker Rule, which was sort of a Glass-Steagall light. It sort of was an idea to go back to some of the requirements after the Great Depression, when we had a formal separation of the riskiest parts of a bank from commercial banks. This thing has been toiling around for 3.5 years and, you know, still hasn't seen the light of day. So part of the problem is that the rules haven't been written. The other part of the problem is that even after the rules are written, you know, at its core, Dodd-Frank didn't go to the core problem, in my view, of the financial crisis, and the core problem raised, as we were discussing earlier, of Eric Holder's reluctance to hold these institutions accountable, and that it leaves intact these giant financial institutions that are still too big to fail. And, you know, here we are 5 years later, and the biggest banks are 30% larger than they were in 2008 going into this crisis. So even when all the rules are done, it's still not going to get to the core of the problem.
And, of course, the argument that the financial industry would make when they hear you say that is, well, if we reduce the size of the banks in New York, London will make them bigger, or China will make their banks bigger, and we will lose our competitiveness on the global stage.
Look, as far as a taxpayer and as a participant in the financial system, I don't terribly care if one of the largest financial institutions is a little less profitable, because what they're really saying when they say that is, okay, these large international banks over in Europe, they're fully subsidized by their governments. They have too big to fail guarantees, and that gives them an opportunity to extract subsidies from the taxpayers. And what the American banks are saying when they say that is, we want that too. We want what was recently calculated as an $85 billion a year subsidy. That's money that's essentially going from our taxpayer pockets into their balance sheet of profit each year, and we don't want to give that up. Well, I believe in capitalism, and in capitalism without a subsidized industry, I think they'll be more competitive. If you go back and look to before this era of mega banks, of universal banks, you know, in the late 1990s, the number one investment bank in the world wasn't a giant European universal bank. It was little old Goldman Sachs, probably one-tenth the size of it is as it is today, and it ate everybody's lunch because it was leaner, meaner, didn't have the conflicts of interest that are sort of riddled through these giant institutions, didn't have the problem of being too big to manage. So I really discount that. You know, it's really funny. If you go back and you look at the Great Depression and you look at Glass-Steagall and the laws that, you know, helped protect our economy for decades and decades, the arguments that are advanced today were the exact same arguments that they made back then. And they weren't true then, has been proven. And they're simply not true today.
Now, this is all very complicated stuff. And even some of the people on Wall Street didn't understand some of these financial instruments they were using. As you oversaw the bailout, did the people in Washington, the members of Congress, members of the administration, did they understand this industry and all that was going on with it at the time?
You know, one of the most startling things I saw when I first got down there in December of 2008, and I was trying to unravel the money that had already gone out the door and the dozen or so programs that were still in the works that they were planning to lay out, you know, with hundreds of billions of dollars of taxpayers, at times trillion-dollar programs that they were considering. And with some of them, when I started asking questions, I realized that the Treasury officials I was talking to couldn't answer my questions. They didn't. It's not only that they did not understand the market, they didn't understand their own programs. And eventually, I have to keep asking and asking, and I found some, you know, economist at the Fed who seemed to understand it. And what was happening was that the industry was sort of dictating the terms of these bailouts, and the government was out of you know, shock and fear, I think, were going along without necessarily thinking about them. So of course, as we tried to unravel them and do our job, we found that they were filled with trapdoors and vulnerabilities for fraud and conflicts of interest. But there really was a fundamental lack of understanding of the complexity of some of these instruments. And I think when you look back and see some of the failures, it has something to do with the fact that they were really, and sometimes it seemed like they were flying blind.
Well, since the crisis, there's been a lot of criticism of what happened coming out of Washington. Senator Elizabeth Warren held some high-profile hearings when she was chair of the Congressional Oversight of TARP. This was before she became a senator. Here is some tape from a 2009 hearing. She's dressing down Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner over the way the government bailed out the insurance giant AIG.
Chrysler and GM, insolvent company, AIG, insolvent company. Chrysler and GM have bondholders, unsecured creditors, secured creditors, and employees, and they all took big haircuts. AIG had people holding credit default swaps, and they took no haircut at all. Ended up with money from the federal government, 100 cents on the dollar, and I'm trying to understand why those two are different from each other.
Neil Barofsky, did the government have a choice in bailing out not just AIG but the banks?
There had to be something. There had to be some form of bailout. I think that there's there was such fear. There was such paralysis in the markets. And the bottom line is a number of these institutions were insolvent. They were headed towards bankruptcy. And after Lehman went down, no one was willing to take the chance and roll the dice to see what would happen if another one went down. But that's not to say that what they did was the right way of doing it. And I think so often what gets lost in this debate is that there's this sense either you did it, either you support the way they did it, or you don't know what you're talking about. And the bottom line is they didn't have to do it on such generous terms. And what Senator Warren was referring there in overly generous terms on the AIG bailout, not necessarily to AIG, but to AIG's counterparties, the big banks to which AIG owed money in this this magnificent backdoor bailout of those institutions, is Exhibit A. They could have still saved AIG. They probably needed to save AIG, but they didn't have to do it in such a way that was such a giveaway and that really increased the moral hazard. That is, no lessons were learned from the counterparties. Other than if you do business with a giant too big to fail institution, you don't need to worry about it because Uncle Sam is going to sit there and backstop all of your bad bets.
Well, in the minute or so we have left, we should point out that TARP money was paid back in full. The AIG bailout was paid back in full. Do you expect that in the next financial crisis, when it happens, that things will be different next time?
First of all, I would just say not all the TARP money was paid back in full. They're still expecting some significant losses in the tens of billions of dollars, but it's far less than what we expected. And look, we're headed towards another financial crisis, because we didn't fix the fundamental problems and the perverse incentives and the too-big-to-fail problem that was present in the last one. But we're going to have a real big political problem as we go down that path again because of the incredible unpopularity of the bailouts. And in large part, I think, Treasury bears responsibility for running them in a non-transparent, at times deceptive, and uneven-handed way that had a huge reward to Wall Street but left Main Street struggling homeowners in the middle class absolutely left behind. And I think it's going to be a real problem next time.
Neil Barofsky served as Special Inspector General of the Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP, the $700 billion government bailout of the financial industry. He's author of Bailout, an inside account of how Washington abandoned Main Street while helping Wall Street. Neil Barofsky, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Funding for Here and Now comes from Olin College of Engineering, focusing students on the needs of people in the real world to ignite passion and innovation. Olin.edu. And Brilliant Earth, committed to environmental and social responsibility with conflict-free diamond engagement rings, wedding rings, and other fine jewelry. Online at brilliantearth.com.